Gotta love the theme music, Don.
Oh.
Totally upbeat. Every time I listen to it, I keep thinking we have the old music, and then I hear the new theme come on. I went, that is awesome.
Yeah.
We're big fans here.
Yep.
Took us a while to pick it, though.
Had to get the right one.
Yep.
Boy, and it was, that wasn't easy.
No.
No, it's like, oh, yeah, I like that.
We went through a lot.
Went through a ton of them. Went through a ton. So this weekend is going to be a big weekend for lots of people burning fire, you know, having fires and burning firewood, et cetera.
In campgrounds.
Yep,
campgrounds. All over the Midwest.
And it is the unofficial start to summer. No matter where you're going, this is the start. And I think this is kind of the, maybe I'm wrong, but this is, in my mind, this is kind of the kickoff to, after all we've been through the last 2 years, this is kind of the first somewhat normal kickoff, Memorial Day and summer. Don't you guys?
I would say so, with no restrictions and stuff.
No restrictions, yeah.
It's really nice.
I'm not going to argue. Never thought we'd be here.
All right.
And what a great way to celebrate Memorial Day weekend, celebrating all those that gave so much, and big, big things there. But keep in mind, when we're looking at firewood, a lot of people can go gather firewood. It's not, you're not supposed to do that, getting it, you know, from different places and bringing it long distances. That's the big issue at hand, when people will get firewood from, let's say, 300-400 miles away, bring it with them, bring it up to the cabin or whatever. The issue is, it's pests, diseases, etc., that would be exposing that forest or that area to this new strain of whatever that may not be in that particular forest. So again, it's invasive species, Don, and that's extremely important to keep that in mind. Firewood from different locations can bring harmful tree problems to backyards, streets, favorite campsites. Just one firewood log can easily hide insects such as emerald ash borer, which we know how devastating that is, the spongy moth, or tiny spores of tree-killing fungal disease such as oak wilt. Just buy local firewood and avoid moving them long distances to introduce these other issues. Buying local is the only way everyone can do their part to protect the forests. Remember, buy it where you burn it and don't move firewood. And
see, really, I never even thought of that.
Kind of a neat story. To prevent the spread of the emerald ash borer and other invasive insects and diseases, you can check out the DNR of the state that you're in. Log on to thevalleyoutdoors.com, and you can certainly pull it up. Visitors oftentimes are prohibited from bringing firewood from locations further than 10 miles away. And treated pest-free wood from state-certified vendors is exempted from the regulation. However, all state park staffs and forest campgrounds have firewood available for sale, and all of those will vary based on the state park. Keep that in mind. And of course, if you don't know where to get local firewood, there's an actual place to check it. It's called Firewood Scout.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And, yeah. I mean, it's not uncommon, I would think, for people, a lot of people in campgrounds that are going to different parks or whatever, and to throw, a box full of firewood in there so they have some when they get there. Because if it's a nice weekend, you'll see a lot of campfires going in a campground or at cabins, like you say. So you have to be cautious with that.
I think in Wisconsin, aren't they called cottages?
They are.
See?
Mm-hmm.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
Yeah, they refer to them as cottages. I don't either, but my uncle had one.
We're just going to go with it. story, Don, that I think it's at the core of your outdoors love in the fishing. There's nothing you like more than to catch this species of fish I'm going to talk about right now, and I think some of our
you've got
know
that
exactly
backwards.
What it is. It's
you've got
the
that
angler
backwards.
That catches a 67-pound, 8-ounce South Dakota state record flathead catfish, and it caught it in the Missouri River, smashed a record that has stood for 16 years.
Wow.
This is a cool story.
Mr. Whiskers, where did this get caught at?
Don't tell me where we were. This gentleman was from Iowa, and this caught in the Missouri River in Union County, which is the southeast part of the state that borders on Iowa.
Okay.
So, state record alert, the monster came in at 51.5 inches and a girth of 32.5. Now, I've got a 55-inch...
51 inches?
51 inches long. I got a 55-inch muskie, and I can't even imagine trying to get a catfish. He hooked into the brood at 5 a.m. on a morning not long ago, very, very recently. He was soaking cut bait in this particular area, and he actually is a rod maker. He used a particular rod. I don't need to mention the rod, not a big deal, but he might be able to cash in on his record as Catch the Fever offers, this is the rod company, a state record payout promotion that offers anglers up to $25,000 for using their gear to catch a state record fish.
Oh.
So, might as well mention it, right? Fever Hellcat Rod.
Okay.
Catch the Fever Hellcat Rod. His fish easily smashed a longstanding record of 63-pound, 8-ouncer caught in 06 out of the James River. According to the South Dakota Game Fish and Parks, flatheads are found primarily in slow-moving rivers in the southeast part of the state, congregate in deep pools and cover. And they eat both live and dead fish, and insects and crustaceans. While his fish is a record breaker for South Dakota, it doesn't even come close within the spitting distance of the world record, which is 123 pounds from Kansas Elk City Reservoir in 1998.
Okay, the body of water that was caught in, was it the Missouri?
Missouri River,
okay.
Yeah, southeast part of the state.
Sure.
How about that for a...
Well, that's bigger than the one you taught me how to catch.
Don, I want to start small. We have to get you into the understanding of how to catch.
It was supposed to be a walleye, though.
Well,
was it supposed to be a walleye
on the way
with
up
whiskers
to the boat? Don't you know that happens? It was a 7-pound walleye, and then then you decided to be mental against it, and then it turned into a catfish.
Happens.
It does. It's proven.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who, but somebody proved the theory. We're just going with that. What can I say, Don? I don't know what else to say about it.
What is the saying? Even a blind sow can catch an acorn or find an acorn?
Well, and that's one of those things, and nothing we can do about it.
No.
No. No, absolutely not.
He hasn't taken me fishing since.
Why do you think?
It's all that good luck I bring.
Come again?
It's all that good luck.
Don, when we went, we were going salmon fishing. We were trying to catch salmon is what we're trying to do. Right?
No, not by the dam.
Yes, that was the reason we went.
Oh, I thought we were catching a walleye.
Oh, see, Ava? You give them the book, they eat the cover.
And that's, yeah.
And that's the biggest issue we have at hand.
But hey, we're going to be talking about walleyes.
Yeah?
You got a cool story. I want to hear it.
We got a cool story.
Quit dilly-dallying.
Yeah.
Well,
are these pastel?
Huh?
Are they pastel?
Well, that's what color walleye can be.
Yeah.
As I flip through my stories here to get to it.
Yeah, he's a searcher.
That's why he's delaying.
I gotcha. Unprepared.
No, I'm prepared.
Do we need a break, Eric?
No, we're good. You know what? Let's take a break. Doggone it. You know, Ava, when you...
He's
you
rustling know, through all his papers.
That's what
here.
I'm here for, Eric. You can just say, Ava, I'm not ready. Let's take a break.
Ava, let's take a break.
All right.
We'll be right back. More Valley Outdoors right after this. Here's your chance to fish with us, the Valley Outdoors. It's simple to do. Register online at thevalleyoutdoors.com and wait for your name to be drawn. We're giving away a trip to four individuals that includes lodging in Ashkenham Resort in Ash River and fishing the waters of Cabotogama and Namekin Lakes. Join Don and I on this fabulous fishing trip September 17th through the 22nd. You can bring your own boat or fish with one of us. Plus, a walleye seminar and contests for prizes throughout the trip. Just register today at thevalleyoutdoors.com. Crimp sponsored by The Valley Outdoors Radio and Ashkenham Resort. Get registered today to fish with us. Winner announced on August 20th on The Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Complete promotional rules available at thevalleyoutdoors.com. So, Don, I mean, we teased a little bit about walleye colors, etc., what different colorations walleye can be. What's your favorite color walleye? Because everybody does have a favorite color.
I do.
Yeah.
The really golden walleye. And you typically find them way up north in Canada. We've caught the blue ones up there, closer to Lake Winnipeg. They get green, more of a lime green out of that lake.
Greenbacks.
Yep. But I have caught blue. And then there's the ones that are just lighter.
When you get chocolate milk water, like Detroit River, you get a really faded color because the coloration of the water doesn't provide a lot of light. What I find is the tamarack stained water, the darker water, gets that real golden color. So you've got that kind of a stained water. And the blue walleyes, you know, they're out there too. So we'll have a definitive answer for you.
Okay.
Right now.
All right.
What colors are walleyes? Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. The easy answer is green. More correct could be shades of green. Even more correct would be multicolored to include greens, whites, blacks, and yellows. But even that doesn't nail it perfectly, since the walleye spend their life in clear lakes, mostly feed in high in the water column, tend to be faded to pastel shades of green and almost silver. Other walleyes live in a dark stained water, like we're talking about from northern Minnesota, and feed on dark bottoms around weedy areas, have dark, vibrant colors, to the point their backs are nearly black. The greens are vivid, and those colors seem to be painted on a gold backdrop, just what we were talking about.
Yep.
So what's the color of walleye in the some of the photos that they've had out? In this particular one, it's more of a blue color. It's blue. I mean, we're talking blue.
Yep.
Which is amazing to me, and I didn't get it till I read the article. Actually, there once was a subspecies of walleye called the blue walleye, often called a blue pike. They were abundant in Lake Erie, occasionally found in Lake Huron, and even Lake Ontario. The science, or the genetics behind the blue walleyes, it's complex. Some say the blue walleyes and green walleyes were distinct species like horses and zebras, and some say they were more closely related like yellow labs and black labs. Genetic doesn't matter now. Genetics doesn't, because obviously once in the abundant in Lake Erie, species, subspecies, or just odd-colored blue walleyes are now considered extinct in the Great Lakes. Commercial fishermen caught millions of pounds of blue pike in the 50s and years prior. But by the 60s, overfishing by commercials, diminished water quality, which is a big issue, which has now since significantly recovered, and increasing competition with invasive species. Go figure. Here we go. Another part of it, Don. Invasive species caused precipitous population decline, and the blue pike were exterminated by the 70s, which is sad. It's so unique to see that color walleye. I mean, it's just crazy.
I swear, I've seen them up in Canada.
I don't doubt it. So what's up with a recently caught walleye that was in this particular article? Have they been rediscovered? Have they been recreated, as in Jurassic Park, by cloning? Not quite. Actually, the same geneticist who argued about horse hybrid dog breeds and taxonomic differences of walleyes mostly agree that somewhat rare blue walleye found in a few lakes of the Canadian Shield are not closely related to the blue pike from the lower Great Lakes, which is odd. It is. Apparently, these blue walleyes are just oddballs and don't produce any yellow pigment. So it's just a genetic oddity. We learned in grade school with watercolor paints, mixing blue and yellow produces green. No yellow pigment, and the fish are blue.
Have you caught some of those that look almost black, totally black?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it seems like...
No question. And then, of course, you can mix in some sawguys that are a different look as well.
Right.
And that changes kind of the, you know, your overall process, thought process. And, of course, then you get some of those bigger saugers that they don't look like saugers. They don't have that same model appearance. You really have to look closely to see that they are truly a sauger. So, and it was 22, 23 inches, and they're coming back, which is so exciting. I mean, it's just a neat way to look at the fishery is those differentiations. And the blues, the greens also are kind of one of those oddities, because you see some of them are really green. Green.
Yes, like I say, they're almost lime green.
Yep.
But the golden ones, I don't see. I suppose there's a hue of green in the background, but the really bright gold ones.
It doesn't look like there's any green at all.
No.
No. So, yeah, kind of cool.
Yes.
Neat story. We'll jump into this last story for the day. dog falls, this is a bird dog, falls into a 50-foot well and gets rescued by Texas game wardens. I mean, how many times have you been out?
50-foot well.
Yeah. You ever had a dog out there?
Do they say what kind of dog it is?
Yeah. I'll get to the story.
Oh, wow. Let's go.
Let's roll, he says.
Yeah.
A group of hunters in Texas called the Texas Parks and Wildlife game wardens in a certain property after their dog, Maria, ended up trapped in a 50-foot deep abandoned grain silo turned into a well. She'd been chasing quail in the brush, and her owners lost track of her, and they eventually found her at the bottom of the well. They had no way of getting her out, and it was a pointer. I know that. They arrived on the scene with rope and a wire dog kennel. They put the makeshift pulley system together, hoisted a kennel into the well. The wardens also put a few dead quail into the kennel? Dog crate to lure the dog in. With some encouragement from her owner, the dog was coerced into entering the kennel. Emergency responders, the dog owner, and fellow quail hunters finally were amazed at how the situation unfolded. Back on the surface, the owner checked her for injuries. She appeared to be unharmed, fully alert, with no broken bones, which is crazy.
Yes. 50 foot?
Wow. I would still bring it to the vet, but yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So
where did this happen at?
Texas.
Okay.
So I
can't imagine they're allowed to have any open wells like that in the field.
Well, again, it was a grain silo that ended up apparently turning into
blowing over or something, but
probably,
still,
I don't know. You know,
a hunter could go down there too, you know.
Trust me, some of those, you know, you walk along, you can get those pitfalls and some of those ridges and whatever else, and it turns into a not a good thing.
I've gotten my foot stuck in a badger hole. Couldn't get it out. Scared all my hunting partners.
Well, you could break an ankle doing that too.
I was getting worried especially about getting chewed off.
if you carry over the top, you know, your body.
Yeah.
I mean, you can seriously injure a limb, so you just got to watch where you're going. So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, good thing it ended up a good.
It was a positive thing.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
happy
I'm
positive.
I'm glad
story.
The dog's okay.
Yeah. Always good to hear about that. You know what's also good to hear? New year coming up. I mean, as far as out in the water and people enjoying fishing and new season, spending time with friends out in the outdoors. Be careful out there. Don't forget to register for Fishing With Us.
Fish FOMO. With Us.
And join us next week. Hang tight, guys. We'll see you soon. Bye.